Before we begin today's show, Season 8, Heavy Metals Inside the Karoly Gymnastics Empire, is a groundbreaking 7-part podcast series that takes listeners on a deep dive into the lives and influence of Bella and Marta Karoly, the most successful and controversial coaches in USA gymnastics history. Subscribe now to the 30 for 30 feed on Apple Podcasts. The whole season is now available on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. Joining us to do it today from Boston is Jackie McMullen. Jackie, hope you enjoyed your little time off you had recently. Hope you got some recharge.
I did, with my family. I did all sorts of things I shouldn't have, like play basketball and swim to the island, all bad for my neck, but I would do it again.
Island? What island are you swimming
to? Oh, there's just, our place is on a little bay, and there's just a little island. It's not that long of a swim, except for if you're me, which I'm not much of a swimmer. But it felt great. I did it with my kids, so that's why it was great.
All right.
Did you get buckets? Hold on. Did you get buckets? Like, do you still have game or what?
So I was really bad for a while. And then, so this was a 4-on-4 game with my sister and her significant other. And we were playing against younger, like all Doug and his 23-something-year-olds. Mm. So now the four of us, at all the older people, we all had some serious credentials back in the day. But as we know, Father Time is undefeated and he remains undefeated. Ah. But I had a little spurt near the end where I just got mad because I was so bad. And then I started jumping and I'm not supposed to jump ever again. And so then I started, because that was my game, rebounding, right, put back. So I started jumping and I felt a little better about myself until I woke up the next day and thought, gotcha. Oh my God,
you know. I feel like Jackie's got sharp elbows, McMahon.
Oh, for sure. No
pointy
question.
Elbows, as my friend Tony Reale says, both on the court and on the air.
Right, that's right.
I was going to say, I think that's helped her in her career, for sure.
That's Tim McMahon joining us from Dallas, Texas. Jackie, after so much analysis and talk about the bubble, I was actually really relieved and excited when Brett Brown and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons gave some interviews over the last few days and talked about a pretty major change to the Sixers, strategy coming into the restart, and just excited because it's basketball strategy talk amongst one of the most interesting teams out there. And they flirted with this before I guess it was February, but then Ben Simmons got hurt his back and got shut down. But Al Horford is going to be taken out of the starting lineup, put back on the bench, and Ben Simmons is going to go to power forward. He's no longer going to play point guard. I don't know if they announced this, but I think it's going to be Shake Milton who's there.
Second year guard. He's been playing great. Yeah.
So, Jackie, you closely follow the 76ers. What did you make of these decisions coming out here?
I think it's the right thing to do, and it's not to disrespect Al Horford, who I still think will have a major impact on this team. And in fact, if he doesn't have a major impact on this team, it's bad news for this team. Just because they're doing this to start the game doesn't mean it always ends up this way, as you guys all know. And the numbers tell us. It's pretty blatant. And everyone always talks about Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, not the numbers not good for them playing together. That's not really true. They're not as good as they were, but they've still been in the plus. The bad numbers were Al Horford and Joel Embiid on the court together. And so this solves that problem to a degree. I think it takes some pressure off Al, who, if you remember, just before we left for this pandemic, was getting a lot of grief from the Sixers fans because Al's never going to be a box score stuffer. His talents are more subtle than that. There was a guy here in Boston, Lou Marloni, one of my favorite Red Sox players of all time, great guy, but he was calling him Average Al while he was here in Boston because he was looking strictly at the numbers, okay?
That's cheap but funny.
Right. But we all of us who watch Al understand what he did for the Celtics and what he could do for the Sixers, but really hasn't done, in part because he hasn't had the ball in his hands that much. So I think this is going to help Al Horford, and I think it's going to help the Sixers. And, I mean, we all know this is where Ben Simmons belongs. And I'm not saying that Ben Simmons can't play the point, and that he won't play the point in the future. But for this shortened little, whatever you want to call this, bubble palooza redo, this makes great sense because you don't have time. You don't have time. And Ben Simmons can play power forward in his sleep.
Al Horford's having the worst shooting season of his career, but part of that is because they've taken away the pick and roll action in his game.
Absolutely. It's not all his fault. It just isn't. I mean, not really.
They got Ben Simmons in the position that is his natural position. And you know, I think this is a move that they had to make to try to see if the Simmons Embiid thing can reach its potential. It's not can they be pretty good with that team. It's can with two of the top, you know, we can argue top 10, top 15, wherever you want to say they are, with those two guys together, you know, can it be 2 + 2 = 4 instead of 2 + 2 = 3? And it's not that Simmons to me, you know, I've said it before, I look at him and see the potential for him to be like a 6'10" hyper-athletic version of Draymond Green. He's still going to be a playmaker. You know, he's still going to have the ball in his hands, but it's just, when do you want the ball in his hands? You want the ball in his hands when he's ripping down a rebound and flying up the floor in transition. You don't necessarily want him to be the primary initiator of a half-court offense.
No, you're so right. And, you know, he also can be a screener. He can be a short roll passer. He can do all of those things. And just because we're putting him – that's why this whole positionist basketball that we talk about all the time, to me, this is a perfect example of it. I mean, didn't Ben Simmons play power forward a lot anyway? I feel like he did. So your point is an excellent one, Tim. Ben Simmons in transition is close to unstoppable when he gets a full head of steam because he's so strong, so quick, so smart. And that's not going to change.
This is also about Shake Milton. Now, Shake Milton.
It is. Yeah, you're right. Shake
Milton was a two-way player last year. I really didn't know much about him at all. I can't verify that I even saw him play once last season. And then I was at the Sixers media day this year, and I ran into him, and I didn't even recognize him as a 76ers player, to be honest with you. So they signed him in the offseason. He was a second round draft pick. They signed him in the offseason to a long term deal, or a multi year deal. I don't know if it was long term. He's played 32 games this year, but he's made 16 starts. Let me give you Shake Milton's stats as a starter, and a lot of it came because of Simmons' injury. But in those 16 starts, he's averaged 28 minutes in those games, 14 points, 3 rebounds, 3.6 assists, and then here is the big numbers. 54% overall shooting, 50% on threes, and that is taking in those 16 games 73s. So it's not like he's shooting one a game.
Right.
So this is the kind of floor stretcher, shot creator that has been missing from this lineup, and. You know, frankly, this isn't just about Al. It's also about Shake Milton. And I applaud Brett Brown. I mean, maybe this was a layup. Maybe this was going to happen anyway. Maybe this is what he was always planning on doing. But I applaud Brett Brown for doing it right now because I think that it was clear that they needed to shake things up. And also, Tobias Harris had an interesting throwaway line. I was not on the Zoom press conference. I only saw the quotes afterwards, but he sort of just moved right past this. So it's hard for me to know whether he was just sort of saying this parenthetically or he was making a point. But in reading the quote, he said, you know, everybody knows our chemistry wasn't that good this year. And while that's obvious to anybody who spent a lot of time watching the team, I think it's important for them to say that. And I think it's important for them to address it and try to alter their lineup. I also think it was interesting that Joel, when he was asked, when he came back and gave his first interview from Orlando, he was asked about how the offense should run. And I think it should be obvious. I think it should be through me. So, you know, that was the one thing about Joel this season is that he, you know, was yielding at times. You know, at the beginning of the year, he was talking about being the MVP, but then he found himself yielding because either he or Simmons had to sacrifice and he felt he had sacrificed more. So here you have Joel at least talking the game like he doesn't want to do that anymore. So we'll see how that plays out, Jackie.
Yes, but I think so. That's the one question mark you would have is, as you go into this bubble, the starting lineup that we just unveiled has played exactly zero times together. Zero.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Zero times. So this is good for them to have this 2-week training camp or however long it is. I've lost track at this point, and see if they could develop. I think it's going to be fine. And I also think you're making a mistake if you think that Al Horford's now out of the mix. I just don't think that's the case.
Right.
I think you know, they're going to find a way. I was just looking at our colleague Tim Bontemps' story again, because he had some good numbers in that story. And, you know, to illustrate the point we were talking about, when Joel Embiid was on the floor without Al Horford, the Sixers were 8.9 points per 100 possessions better. When he was on the court, when Horford was on the court without Embiid, Philadelphia 5.2 points per 100 possessions better than the opposition. When they were together, outscored by 1.3 points per 100 possessions. The numbers are right there.
You know, Al Horford's a center in the modern NBA. And I would even argue, and I've said this before on this podcast, I think for periods of games, Ben Simmons is a center in the NBA, can be an NBA, depending on who's out there for the opposition.
Or depending on what team he's on.
Yeah, but that's different kinds. I mean, you just named two players that could play center, but they're going to play it very differently.
My point is they're trying to shoot
threes. He can.
Well, I mean, Tobias Harris could play center under some circumstances, but right. I think they've been trying to play essentially with three different center types out there, which is kind of
clunky. It's clunky.
What were you saying, McMahon?
If we're going to be talking numbers, it is small sample size theater, but it's you know, worth mentioning. Embiid, Simmons, Milton on the floor together, 113 minutes, net rating minus 13.7. Oh. That is the worst. That now.
How about that,
again,
huh?
And I think you got to kind of.
I got to ask a question. Was Horford on the floor with them? Just curious.
You know, that's a good question. Short answer is I don't know. I think it's also worth mentioning this is, you know, they do have a training camp to kind of, you know, work on that. And 113 minutes, it's over eight games. You know, I think having a training camp to kind of define the roles, you know, my guess is Simmons was playing point guard there. Milton was off the ball. But, you know, again, it's, to me, this makes a lot of sense, but it's not like, you know, there's statistical evidence of boom, this is the solution. I think it can be, but you know, it's not like the small sample size that they have together has been just spectacular basketball.
I like that they're just changing up, though. I'm not positing that this is going to work. I just like that Brett Brown is being aggressive because, Jackie, it's the six. If the Sixers have a disappointing season, there's going to be changes, and Brett knows that that could include him. So, you know, he's fighting. I mean, I don't know if I want to say he's fighting to keep his job, but he is. He is under pressure to try to do something to shake it up.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I think I've talked to Brett once or twice over the course of the layoff for various stories I was doing. And I think this is something he had been contemplating anyway, because, you know, you can go back with what you have, but you're, what are they, sixth right now in the East?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, come on. We all know that they're better than that. And Brett knows that. He's not a dummy. And with Simmons so healthy. All right. This is really funny. I have to tell you guys something. This is very funny. Someone just sent me a video of Ben Simmons hitting a three in practice.
Well, I've seen him hit threes in practice myself.
But I'm just thinking this is very funny because we're literally talking about it in real hand. And it looks, let me play it again.
Was it Brett Brown?
No, it was not Brett Brown. But come on, that would be really funny.
Ben Simmons, stretch four.
Hold on. I'm looking. I'm going to tell you, this is so funny that someone's, let's see. And he shoots it. Lefty.
Yeah. Is he landing on 1 foot or two? I'm not a shooting coach, but that's a big factor.
He looks great. That's all I'm going to say. Very funny. That's a very funny thing that just happened.
Okay. By the way, as they would be lined up with Boston, depending on what happens in the seeding games. Jackie, the Celtics were a little evasive about what was going on with Kemba Walker, and finally Brad Stevens had to come clean. Kemba when he started up workouts again, that knee started bothering him. This is a yellow warning light for the Celtics, I feel like. This season, but also that they invested $100 million in him.
Yes, yes. And I feel I was, you know, it's funny. I tried to reach Kemba a bunch of times during this layoff because in my head, this is the way I think sometimes. I'm like, I wonder if he had like a little scope or something, right? You know, maybe. And I have no evidence of that. And I'm pretty sure he didn't. But I wanted to, you know, see because he was really, really struggling the final weeks before this halt to the season. Now, the beneficiary of that, and no one really benefits from that, obviously, because he's such a huge part of what they do. But, you know, it coincided with Jason Tatum just taking off like a rocket ship. And but that doesn't mean they don't need Kemba Walker. No one ever should mistake that. So I do think there's grave concern there. Kemba is so important to them, especially his perimeter shooting, obviously, but other things. So he's just a leader.
Yeah, you know, I have no idea about how his leg was feeling, but you know, the interesting thing was he played in that interminable fourth quarter in the All-Star game in the Elam ending, where everybody played like 20 minutes at this super high intensity.
Right.
And he just really, you know, I'm not saying it's like, remember, you know, Pedro Martinez in the All-Star game, like might have thrown his arm out.
Yeah, but man, it was worth it. I got that framed on my wall, my house. I was there with my dad and my husband was there with his dad. And they were talking about watching Babe Ruth play. True story. So continue.
Yeah, I'm just saying like, by the way, I mean, the Elam ending, the fourth quarter of the All-Star game is the most fun I've had watching basketball in a long time.
Very cool.
I just looked up interminable.
Very long.
Good use of the word.
Right.
Thank you. All right. Staying
endless,
in the
often used.
Yeah. So I think Kemba. I think Kemba for them. I mean, I don't want to just point to that moment, Brian, in that All-Star game because I think this has been something that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying
nagging at him for a while. But
After that, he really seemed to be struggling with the knee after the All-Star break.
So here's a nice segue for you, because I think I know where you're going next. So this is my way of assisting you. The Celtics are hoping that the Sixers have great success with this new lineup and that the Pacers drop to sixth in the standings. Because why?
Because the team that's struggling that they struggle the most against in the regular season in the East was the Sixers. They would
No. Come on. I know, but
I'm explaining why the Celtics would not want the Sixers in the sixth spot. I wrote a story yesterday about Victor Oladipo's really sort of interesting. I actually wanted to call it a gray area, but as I started talking to sources with the league, the union, and the Pacers, they said it's actually not a gray area. If he doesn't play, he's not going to get paid. So Victor Oladipo is owed $3 million, give or take. It's actually $3.2 million, but when you take out the escrow, it's $2.7 million. Don't pay attention to that. It's just say $3 million. He's owed $3 million, but he has announced via an interview with The Athletic. He said, "I'm healthy, but I'm not playing." And under the rules, if you are healthy and elect not to play, like Avery Bradley and Trevor Ariza, among others, you don't get paid. So the union says, hey, he's down there. He went through quarantine. He's down there practicing with this team. He's demonstrating an attempt to play. He just doesn't feel comfortable playing. And the league is saying, and the Pacers, by the way, are fine. They're like, hey, we support him no matter what. We're ready to pay him, no problem. But the league is like, look, we can't set the precedent that somebody could just, you know, what they don't want is somebody to say, listen, I'm tired of being here in Orlando. I'm going to walk. They don't want the precedent that you can just opt out healthy and not get paid. And so I think they intend to hold Victor's feet to the fire here. And Victor, it's not just that $3 million on the contract this year he's worried about. He's also, you know, extension eligible this offseason, whether it's with the Pacers or whether he would potentially get traded. He could extend as part of a trade. And I think it's responsible to look at the Pacers as Victor as a possible trade candidate for a number of reasons, which we can discuss. But the strange thing about this is that now Victor is sort of reevaluating his opt-out. And from what I understand, I mean, at least the way, what I've been led to believe, I don't know if it's 100% true or not, his reevaluating is not to do with the $3 million, although I can't accept that it doesn't figure into at least part of his thinking, but it affects the fact that he's gotten out and played 5-on-5 with his team for 4 days and feels pretty good. From what I understand, he looks fantastic. From what I understand, he looks better than any Pacer down there, even the guys who are fully healthy. Now, Malcolm Brogdon is coming back from COVID, so I don't know what kind of condition he's in. But I heard he's the best guy on the floor. And it may just be that he's out there actually playing and saying, you know what, I might be able to do this. But McMahon, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when you guys both disagreed over whether you would extend him or not. But this is an interesting situation now that he appears to be reevaluating it. Now, where do you see this situation?
Messy. And I think the Pacers are in a really tough spot. I don't know if Oladipo wants out, but he certainly doesn't seem like the happiest camper in the world in Indiana. So if it reaches a point where the Pacers feel like it's in their best interest to explore the market for him, it's tough to shop a guy who's coming off such a major injury, whether he plays in this. I mean, obviously for them, it'd be best if he plays in the restart, looks good. It's a showcase. And then they can go to the summer, hoping to be able to trade him at close to full value. But man, it's, coming off that injury, that's a tough situation. If it's a deal where they feel like, okay, we can either trade him, and they don't have to trade him this summer, but just in terms of getting value, a year left as opposed to before the deadline. If they feel like, we either need to try to get something for him or lose him for nothing next summer, that's a tough spot.
It is. But I think you're onto it. I think that there was another story about Oladipo where someone quoted him saying as he wants two things. He wants to get paid a lot of money. And he wants to win and not just win games.
Me too.
Right. Don't we all?
And yeah, paid a lot of money first.
Okay. Duly noted, Mr. McMahon. You might have to learn what an interminable means without looking it up first. That would just be my advice. But anyway.
That's what's holding me back.
Yeah, but no, I'm teasing. But anyway, I do think if you're Oladipo, you look at this. And the second thing, by the way, said he wants to win like a championship. So if you're Oladipo, and you've had this injury and you've sat out and you whatever. And then you hear Paul George come out and make the comments that Paul George made not that long ago about him wanting to try to get the Pacers to trade for Anthony Davis. And George was indicating that he thought he could get this to happen, that he could convince Anthony Davis to make this happen. Now, I don't know, and I've got to be clear about this. I have no idea if, in fact, those conversations were had and the Pacers said, all right, we'll try. And then the New Orleans said, no, we're not trading him. Forget about it. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer to that. But if you're a player and you hear another player who you consider yourself probably on the same level with, and I'm sure Victor considers him on the level of a Paul George, say that, I couldn't win there. We're never going to win there because they wouldn't pay. They wouldn't bring in the second big superstar and pay him the big money and all that. And I don't know the parameters of that. I don't know what's true and what isn't about that. I want to be clear. But there is one thing we do know, and that is Indiana is a small market team that consistently has not gone out and paid big money. We know that this was something that frustrated Larry Bird, who's a legend in the state of Indiana and elsewhere, I might add. It frustrated him enough that he stepped aside, that the Pacers have never shown us consistently that they'll go all out to do whatever it takes, like a Steve Ballmer, to win a championship. So if you're Victor Oladipo, you're sitting back and you're looking at that and saying, well, maybe there's a team that would go all out, and that would include getting me, and maybe I can win something. I'm going to be 29 when that contract is up. I think that's the right number. So that's just a little backdrop to maybe what he's thinking right now. And I haven't talked to Victor. This is just me.
Yeah, well, Victor is he's a high character guy.
100%.
But he has never been a free agent. So like many players who are at this stage of their career, especially players who have some success, they start looking around a little bit. But because of he's had this serious injury, mm-hmm. He has got to protect that big contract. Now, his contract he's on right now is, he's making $21 million a year. So
poor guy.
Yeah, he is doing just fine. But as far as the 150 plus million, I think he would like to sign a contract like that. And so he, so on one hand, he wants to balance protecting that leg. On the other hand, he doesn't want to hurt his value by implying that there's a lingering injury. And on the other hand, he's also got to ponder where he wants it to be. So the other thing is this, just moving from 30,000 feet down to 30 feet. When he came back in the winter, he was terrible at the outset. And the team went, I think, 1-5 or 1-6 in his first 7 games. Having said that, at the end of it, right before the shutdown, he was playing much better. His stats improved dramatically and the team had started winning. They were actually, I don't know if hot is the right word, but they were actually had been the best team in the East over the previous 10 games. I think they had the best record when it all shut down. But I will say this. I think we mentioned this recently. They have Domantas Sabonis' extension coming on. They are paying Malcolm Brogdon a 20-plus million a year. They have Miles Turner at a big number. I do not see them having 4 large salaries on their books. So one of those is not going to make it. And I don't think that's a commentary on any of their players. I think that's a commentary on what you mentioned, which is how the Pacers operate as a small market team.
Can I say, Brian, just in fairness to the Pacers, I'm not sure those are the 4 players I would pay max salaries to anyway.
Well, they're not on maxes, but they're all getting.
Right. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean,
they're all paid well.
They're all paid well, but it's not, they're not Anthony Davis, you know?
Right.
So, right.
Yeah. So,
and then you've got the Sabonis Turner, you know, the questions about that fit moving forward in the modern NBA.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
There's been a lot of discussion about the Knicks coach. There's been no discussion, very little discussion about the Nets coach. And I'm going to be very interested, Jackie, who gets that job. But some interesting thing, if you're paying close attention to social media, Rich Kleiman, who is Kevin Durant's business partner and very influential, has been tweeting about Mark Jackson recently. Well, he hasn't tweeted, I want Mark Jackson to coach the Nets, but there was a story in the New York Post just this last week where it was posited about Mark Jackson or Jason Kidd, who obviously was with the Nets before and left after 1 year. You know, he pretty much said he liked the idea, and it is known that Mark Jackson and Kevin Durant have a good relationship. Those tweets and the Jackson Nets possible connection with Durant have not gone unnoticed in the NBA. There are people who are speaking about Mark Jackson as a candidate there. Sean Marks recently gave an interview, I believe it was a radio interview, where he just admitted that Kyrie and Kevin Durant are getting a say in the coaching decision, as they probably got a say in Kenny Atkinson's firing. I mean, the Nets have 8 players who are either not playing or who have come down with the coronavirus. So I'm not analyzing their signings too closely. They're just looking for warm bodies. But the fact that they signed Michael Beasley, who hadn't played in the NBA in a year and a half, and Beasley, unfortunately, you know, got sick and had to go home. But that's a Durant influence signing. And of course, as soon as they signed him, Rich Kleiman applauded the signing on Twitter. I mean, if Durant is really running this team, if Durant and Kyrie are running this team, I could see Mark Jackson getting hired into that job, Jackie.
Yep. I don't think that's a stretch at all. We know that Mark Jackson and his broadcast partner, Jeff Van Gundy, both want back in. That's been pretty evident for a while. If I were the Nets, I'd give Jeff Van Gundy a really, really long look. I know he's been out a while, but just look at what he accomplished while he was in the game. I'm surprised someone hasn't snapped up Jeff Van Gundy. So that's a kind of interesting dynamic too, isn't it? If they were vying for the same job, including the Knicks job, possibly, maybe, you know, it's kind of interesting.
Mark
Jackson's made it very clear he wants to be back. And it is, you know, it appears that the Nets are a player's team. I guess that's all I'll say about that.
Whoa, that's an understatement.
Well, yeah. And Sean Marks is a really good executive, really good. I mean, he and Kenny Atkinson, what they did, I'll say it again, just with nothing, no draft picks, nothing. The culture they built there, you know, I think it's a shame Kenny Atkinson is gone. I don't think he deserved that. I don't think it's right. And I'd like to know still what he did to deserve that. But that's, you know, I'm not running the Nets. But anyway, so I, you know, Sean Marks knows what he's doing. He's a very strong executive, came out of the Spurs family tree. But when you get in, when you start signing these high profile free agents, and I don't think this is unique to just Brooklyn. I think this has happened before everywhere. You covered LeBron, Brian. You know what kind of influence he's had over every franchise he's been on. This is not an isolated incident in Brooklyn by any stretch.
Right.
So this
if you're going to, I mean, sell your soul is a little bit of a strong way to put it. Let's put it this way. Franchises have sold their soul for less players than Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant.
I can't wait to see what Kevin Durant does next year. I mean, I'm just a huge Kevin Durant fan when we're talking about basketball, like just a huge fan. And this injury is brutal. I get it. But there's been this long layoff and now he'll be how many months removed before he plays again? Like,
I don't know. When's next season starting?
Well, we don't know. All right. Fair question. But I can't wait to see how he comes back.
He's the most skilled basketball player I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and it's a shame that it all gets lost in the sauce because he has some interesting social media habits, you know? He's still an unbelievable basketball player.
McMahon, what's going to happen in Brooklyn?
Like you said, ask Kyrie, ask KD. They're calling the shots, but obviously that's not a surprise. I mean, you knew the deal when the Nets signed them. You knew the deal when the Nets signed them and gave their friend a $40 million contract because they wanted that to happen.
And then he installed him as the starter.
Yeah.
You know, DeAndre Jordan.
And then it's just the talent justifies all the stuff that comes along with it. But, I mean, KD hadn't played a game and Kyrie was banged up and Kyrie's already trying to trade half the roster and talking about they don't have enough talent here. It's like, dude, can the guy who, you know, is the best scorer of this generation. Well, I better couch that one of the best because I have to deal with the Rockets and Harden. Can he play 1 second before we just say that there's not enough talent? I mean, it's going to be a
KD
chaotic
is probably
situation.
The best scorer in the history of the NBA. I don't think that's an insult to anybody.
I saw Perk saying that. I don't know. That Jordan guy was a pretty good scorer.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't think Jordan had the skills of Kevin Durant.
KD is. I mean,
whoa! What do you mean?
Jordan's drive, Jordan's will, is top of the game. But a 7-footer who can shoot like that?
Well, Jordan's turnaround too. Wait a minute.
Now, so that's different than what you just said a moment earlier. Now you're talking about the fact that Durant's 7 feet. That's different than skills. That's just physical advantage.
Skill-wise, the big difference is obviously KD's shooting range, which, you know, maybe if Jordan's playing in this era, he's going to develop similar range.
Jordan's footwork, Jordan's intensity, Jordan's
hang time, Jordan's durability.
Yes, Jordan's desire for the moment, all off the charts. But in terms of just straight skill, I've never seen anybody like that.
KD would be a bucket getter if he was 6'4" and he's, you know, whatever, listed at 6'9", whatever. His arms are about a million miles long.
He's listed at 6'9"? There's no way he's 6'9".
No way. There's no way.
And he was the one who everybody thought, like the official measurements, he was going to be way taller, and it wasn't. He must have slouched or something.
You know why? I mean, this is a Jerry Krause thing. You know, Krause was a big believer in measure to the shoulders, not the head.
Right. Big difference.
Durant has very, very high shoulders.
As someone who has very high shoulders myself, I can appreciate that. Long torso. Seriously, a long torso compared to long legs is a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, there's I've covered some players over the years whose necks are preposterously long.
That's bad. That's bad.
Right. Well, if you're 6'10" and your shoulders are 2 inches shorter than a guy who's 6'9", then you're not really tall. You're not really bigger than him, is what Jerry Krause's point was. So I don't know what Durant's listed as, but his shoulders are way the hell up there, and his release is way the hell up there. And he's one of the most, other than Dirk, he is the most undefensible jump shooter I've ever seen.
And his
range is better than Dirk's range.
And his athleticism, which obviously we'll see what that is coming back off Achilles.
Right.
And obviously I've got immense respect for Dirk. I mean, the guy's scored over 30,000 points in his career. I don't need to go over his resume. Having said that, if KD, if his mobility, if his explosiveness is compromised, he can be late prime Dirk. I mean, he's still going to be that long. Yeah. He's still going to be able to shoot the ball. You know, he's obviously worked to get that 1 foot fade. I mean,
I don't know the correct verbiage. Maybe skills is the wrong word, because footwork and all that stuff is skills, like Jordan and Kobe had. So, you know, Jordan and Kobe are very similar. But Durant's, I don't even know if the word natural ability is right, because that implies that Durant doesn't work on his game. Durant has become a great shooter. So I don't know how to qualify. I've never seen anybody.
Let's just leave it at it that he's just incredible and is versatile and diverse as any guy his size. How about that?
Yeah, we've never seen a guy his size who could both shoot and handle it like that.
Yeah,
that's safe to say.
Yeah, and when he got that handle and he could put it on the floor, and basically your only choice was to grab him because he's also a 90% free throw shooter or 80s. Because when he first came in the league, he couldn't really dribble that well. In fact, I think his first 3 years, I don't have it right in front of me, but I think he had as many or more turnovers than he did assists, because he didn't handle that well. But year three or so onward, when he learned to put the ball on the court and he has that real high dribble because he's so tall, it's hard to get it away from him, and he can go low with it. Anyway, the Nets are going to be fine because he is a stud. But I just wonder, I just wonder what's going to happen. And by the way, Mark Jackson might be a really good choice for that team. He's a guy who will command respect walking into the locker room. They're going to have a veteran team. It's more the worrisome that you're letting those guys make the decisions. Because I just don't know if I don't
well,
know.
Well, and maybe we're overstating that. We don't really know. I just think we should be careful.
Well, that's fine. But Sean Marks has come out and said it, that he's letting them have input. And if you look at the things that are happening, it supports that.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
So now I'm going to go to the Knicks coaching search real quick. This has been a very interesting, methodical search. They've talked to 11 candidates. All of them, I think, have had two different Zoom interviews. Yet, the moment that Leon Rose got the job, it was believed that Tom Thibodeau was going to be the coach because of his connections, because of his agency. Jackie, if the Knicks hire Thibodeau, mm-hmm. At the end of all of this, do they get credit for the way they've done this, or is it all been a charade? What's your viewpoint of this?
Oh, I wouldn't call it a charade. We know that, I mentioned Kenny Atkinson before, he's got some internal support there. I think I've spent some time with Tibbs during the off, you know, this off year of his. He was, as you, I think you saw him a lot too in LA.
He looks great.
Looks fantastic. He's in a great frame of mind.
He is.
We talked a lot about basketball, and I think that for him, nothing was a given. He knew that. And so I don't blame Leon Rose for doing it this way. And if he ends up deciding that, yep, Tibbs, I think you can do this, then like, it's not like they need to have the coach in place right now. Their team, it's not even playing. And from what I understand, if there is that second bubble, they might not participate. So,
yeah. So I'll talk about the second bubble in a second. What's so strange about this is Tibbs is represented by CAA, mm-hmm. which Leon Rose essentially started the basketball division at CAA. Wesley had some role at CAA. It was never defined. They don't have to put out a media guide describing their roles, mm-hmm. but Wes was, if not Tibbs' agent, certainly a part of his representation. So now, like, the guys who were your agents for the last 10 years now are talking to you about hiring you. So that's unusual. And I don't know, you know, just because he's been your agent doesn't mean he's your best friend. I mean, like, for example, Jeff Van Gundy and Tom Thibodeau and Steve Clifford are the closest of friends. I don't know how close Tibbs is with Leon Rose and Wes Wesley, but they've known each other for a long time. So now Tibbs is going to negotiate for the job probably at some point. Now the Knicks and Leon are negotiating with his agency that he just left.
Yeah,
about a guy that he knows very well. It's very strange. Also, I think they interviewed 7 different candidates that are represented by that agency.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah.
Like Pat Delaney and Will Hardy and those guys and Chris Fleming, are they all from there?
I know that Will Hardy is represented. Let me just say something about Will Hardy, by the
way. Yeah, he's going to get a job someday soon.
Assistant coach with the Spurs, from what I understand. And I know that this is something that happens when guys interview for jobs and then don't get it. Everybody performed well. Nobody performed poorly. I get it. I heard Will Hardy was spectacular.
Yeah, he's going to be a head coach.
If it's not head coach of the Spurs, Will Hardy, you know, the next guy out of the Spurs tree is going to be Ime Udoka. He is, I would say, who's one of the lead assistants with the Sixers. Ime Udoka, I would be very surprised if he's not a head coach next season in the league.
Well, he interviewed with New York also, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. Also represented by CAA. But yes, he did as well. But I mean, there's no secret on Ime Udoka. Everybody knows that he is going, you know, yep. former Spurs assistant. But Will Hardy is a guy who I heard performed very well in that situation. But there's also one possibility out there. You know, the Knicks next season is going to be a transition season for them. They're not going to be a contender, I don't think, anyway. Mike Miller, who was their interim, did a really good job.
He did.
One of the things that the Knicks could consider is just keeping Mike Miller in the job, going through whatever the 2020-21 season is anyway, get another high draft pick. The 2021 draft is believed to be very good, and the 2021 free agent period is expected to be very good. Maybe the best – the Knicks are going to be in a rebuild mode anyway. The only thing I would say that gives me reason to think that this process may not end up in Tibbs, because I think it will, would be as if they just decide not to hire anybody and leave Mike Miller in the job, who's done a good job, and just – spin their wheels for a year, McMahon. I don't know if they'll do
a half interim coach. No.
Well, I'm sure they have to give him the job. They'd have to give him some sort of contract.
So you give him a contract just to say, hey, we'll probably replace the guy after a year.
Look, I'm just telling you, Tom Thibodeau is not a guy that develops young players. You bring him in, he's going to want to win every single game. So I'm trying to explain why the Knicks would be not have hired him already, which I think they're going to do anyway, but I'm wondering what's going on in there.
But Kenny Atkinson is a guy that has a track record of developing young players.
I'm not going to say a bad word about Tom Thibodeau, but if they hired Kenny Atkinson, I would applaud it.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click ranger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
As far as the secondary bubble goes, from what I understand, some teams, I mean, there are some teams who absolutely want to do that other bubble. They are dying to do it. Teams like Detroit, Cleveland, Atlanta, Minnesota, they want to do it. But there are other teams, the Knicks being one of them, who have said, hey, could one option be not to do the secondary bubble? And then whenever next season starts, the eight of us who weren't able to go to Orlando, could we get a little bit of an extra training camp while everybody starts? Let's say it does start December 1st, which I highly doubt. Let's say, training camp would start November 14th or something like that. They would say, hey, could we start November 1st? Could we have an extra couple of weeks? And the reason some of those teams would want to do that is because then they would have their draft picks. If you, because there's almost certainly not going to be, summer league, of course not. But there's not going to be an opportunity for your young players and your draft picks to play in Las Vegas like there is most years. The secondary bubble, while it's nice and while it would get some games on TV and would engage some of the fans, I think some of these teams are like, hey, how about we do something where all these guys we just draft, because a bunch of these teams who are in the back end, they're going to have high picks, number one. Number two, they have multiple picks. They have multiple first-round picks. So I don't know if that's something that can be done. The union may laugh at that.
But well, the union, if they're going to do any kind of secondary bubble in advance of the NBA season, and I don't know if this short training camp would count, Michelle Roberts has made it clear to everybody, we are going to have the same rules that we have in Orlando. And she's been so firm on that. And teams are pushing back initially saying, hey, can we just have our own little mini camp in our own, our own facility? And maybe, Detroit drives down to Cleveland to play or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that got shut down very fast.
So I heard that
Warriors who, like, the Warriors are like, hey, we'll do what we have to do if the league tells us to do it. But the Warriors don't have any interest in this, in being part of
the
bubble.
Yeah, but the Warriors might like to have a couple
of
extra
weeks
with their top three pick. I mean, they might have.
And again, to your
point, do we even know when the draft camp. But do we even know when the draft is?
I mean, it's October 15th, 14th, 15th.
But maybe not.
Well, that's what they say now. All right. Well, I'm glad we're talking about basketball again. That's a good thing.
So, me too.
All right. I will talk to you guys later. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Have a great rest of your week and weekend. Stay safe, everybody. And thanks for listening.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.